Off top, recently, Harvard University Library removed human skin that was used to bind a book. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show. I'm Dominique Foxworth. That's Charlie Kravitz here, hair looking curly. I mean, your hair is not showing full respect for the program, the seriousness of this program. We have on someone who is showing the proper level of respect for this program, suited and booted, knotted up to accept his award, the one and only Bill Barnwell. Hey, Bill. Don't forget, as you guys can see behind Bill Barnwell, I've gotten a lot of heat from my friends and some family because I made the very truthful claim, or not claim, assertion, that Bill Barnwell is the number one and number two top guest on the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Hands down, no questions asked.
He came through week after week, all season long, cooking it up. Off season, guess who shows up? Bill Barnwell. Guess who gives you good analysis? Bill Barnwell. Guess who gives you a good chuckle? Billy Barnwell. So thank you for being here.
Guess who tells Dominique when he's wrong about football? Bill Barnwell.
Dominique,
we gotta talk.
Wrong about football.
We gotta talk.
Have you taken notes on all that I said that you didn't like?
No, not you.
Oh, okay.
You're fine.
Me?
Okay. Ashley's fine.
Okay.
Bomani's fine. Charlie is fine. Ryan Russillo. I heard what you said about me. I'm going to make one thing very clear.
One thing.
I'm the bald white guy on the Dominique Foxworth Show. Nobody takes my spot. Gojo? Not a chance.
Beat it.
Matthew Berry, not happening.
Graham.
Russillo, watch yourself. Let's go.
You said you were limited.
Let's move on.
I love this version of Bill Barnwell. I love it. It's great.
I'm going to tell you something. If the time comes, I'm going to Turkey so I don't get on Bill Barnwell's turf.
It's not coming. Your locks are strong. Although, got a little cover two happening. As someone whose safeties are getting off the hashes slowly, I see your safeties are looking to go.
Just play single high. Just get that. You could also get that limb lengthening surgery while you're in Turkey too. Just double it up.
Ooh.
Be a couple inches taller. Get that fresh hair going. You are good to go.
Oh gosh. All right. Thank you, Bill. That was a fun way to start the show. My wife, later in the show, she's already mad at me for ranking you ahead of her. I did Bomani's show. He was upset for ranking you ahead of them. The only person who's not bothered by this is Pablo, because Pablo knows his place.
That's right.
Bottom of the stack. All right, Charlie, let's talk about football.
Guys, did you hear about this? Do you know about this?
I know.
There's big offseason news. Well, I mean, look, by the time you're listening to this trade it will have been consummated 2 days ago. Stephon Diggs.
I know.
The petulant pass catcher.
They consummated trades?
That's how you submit trades to the league. I mean, you didn't know that, Dominique?
Sort of. I mean, we know that the rumor was that Stephon Diggs consummated something, and that's why he's not a Buffalo Bill anymore.
Oh, gosh. All right.
He's a Houston Texan.
Mm-hmm.
He was traded for a second-round pick and some other picks to the Texans to be part of a loaded offense with C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell, Nico Collins, Joe Mixon. The Bills. It seems like they're entering a different Josh Allen era. They do not have Steph Diggs, Gabe Davis, the electric offense that we've come to know for the last 3 years. So I think we need to break down this trade in several ways. And the first one I want to talk about is from the Texans' perspective. What does Steph Diggs do for the Texans, and does he bring them appreciably closer to a Super Bowl team?
It depends, right? There's this idea of what Steph Diggs is in our head, which is a phenomenal receiver, a game breaker, a guy who can always get open, sort of a true number one receiver, which there's a lot of good receivers in the NFL, maybe not 32 true number one guys, and a guy who the Texans, as good as Nico Collins and Tank Dell were last year, did not have.
I'm sorry, Bill. Sorry to cut you off. I got to take a 20. I have forgotten that in order to get the best out of Bill Barnwell, we got to run a Bill Barnwell system, which means
say it with your chest.
You come out here with this depends. That is not how you got to the top of the Dominique Foxworth guest charts. Not giving us a nuanced take. So now you can mix in the nuance and the this or that as you get through it, and all the potential like possible permutations of how this trade could play out. Fine. But off the top, Bill Barnwell, Nobody's sticking around for it. Depends. Give me some. A strong take.
They stacked. That's what I have to say.
So
about the Houston Texans, they are loaded after adding Stephon Diggs. And it makes total sense for them. CJ Stroud is on his rookie deal. They have cap space to work with. They're in the same position the Bills were a few years ago when they traded for Stephon Diggs, having to get a wide receiver who gets the most out of your quarterback. The only issue, though, the only thing that I would make a little bit of concern for me if I were the Houston Texans is that I was going on the Dominique Foxworth show for like the final 4 months of the NFL season. And we were talking about how washed Stephon Diggs was because he wasn't producing week after week. That's the only thing that scares me a little bit about this.
So you guys were talking about how washed he was. I never accepted that. And I understand the numbers could suggest
there's a little bit of a bias here.
Yeah. I mean, there's a Maryland bias possibly. And there's also a, they didn't like him and he didn't like them bias. When, the way he started the season, I just have a hard time believing that he went from being a good number one receiver to falling off a cliff midway through the season. They did change offensive coordinators, and there was some, like, at least some people believed, I think Devin McCourty is one person who actually put his name to it, but other people believe that there was a concerted effort to, like, scheme him out because of the way that he was behaving on the team in the locker room. So you could argue, I know that, Bill, where we clash most of the time is I want to talk about the soft stuff, and you rightfully are like, nah.
I'm a hard boy.
Yeah,
you know that.
We can't account for that. So I do think that whatever was happening in the Bills locker room and in the Bills building around Stephon Diggs, from him missing minicamp to the coach saying in the press conference that, yeah, he's very concerned about it, to Trayvon Diggs, Stephon's brother, tweeting about getting him out of there, to just a couple days ago, Diggs is saying, you sure? To people asserting that Josh Allen will be fine without him. So whatever his personality is and how it didn't work there, I think there could be some concern for him coming down to a Houston offense that's on the rise with a young quarterback, with two young receivers who have established something and are looking to build on it. Him coming down there and saying that he has a point to prove, because I know he does. After he left there, he wants to ball out at this new spot. So that could be a challenging dynamic to work out.
So ESPN Analytics has an incredible stat called Open Score, which removes sort of screen passes and swing passes, the passes behind the line of scrimmage, because those receivers often have more separation on those than they do on intermediate routes and longer routes once they engage with defensive backs. Stephon Diggs, three seasons ago, was third in the NFL in open score. He was elite, and the numbers reflect that. The season after, he was seventh, still very, very good. And then last season, including the beginning of the season when he was balling out and scoring a lot in Ken Dorsey's offense, he dropped all the way down to 21st in open score. So regardless of whether or not he is still an impact player, which I think he certainly can be, he is getting less separation as one of these quick, precise receivers than he used to. And which leads me to a question that I want to ask both of you guys about this. Would you be more surprised if he ends up being the number one receiver on the Houston Texans or the number three receiver?
So you can't say that and then transition to a question like, we're not going to respond. Bill had something
to
say.
Well, it leads
before
to it.
Yeah, all right, go ahead, Bill.
I already forgot what I was going to say. Right. No, I didn't forget what I was going to say. Let me ask you that question, Dominic, because I have not been a player in an NFL locker room.
Okay.
Do you believe that the Bills, in a season where they were struggling for most of the year, do you think they would sort of spite themselves by putting Stephon Diggs in a like a secondary or tertiary role just to kind of frustrate him? Like,
I think
it would be at the best interest of the Bills.
Yeah, like, I think that's I think the way that I phrased it may not be fair and is going off of more of what other people were saying, which I shouldn't do. I do think that they did believe that they had to prioritize running the ball and lower risk attempts to protect their defense. And I think that that is not what Stephon Diggs majors in. So I don't think spiting him is the right word, as much as Joe Brady made it clear. It seemed pretty clear that they were trying to do things differently, and that's why they moved on from Ken Dorsey. So I do think that played some factor. And to the open score thing, like, okay, that's one measurement. It's not something that I use. I have to look into it, but my guess is that there's a bunch of you take out the screens and you take out certain things. There are lots of other like decoy routes that you run that you're designed not to be open. So it's a hard thing to measure? Is it just the times when you're targeted that they count the open score? But anyway, all that aside, I watched him play last year, and I didn't watch with an eye of like, is he falling off? I just watched him, and I didn't feel like he fell off. And this is partially
fell
my
off in the divisional round.
Yeah, he dropped that pass
and this fumbled.
Is, but everyone,
that was harsh.
Oh, that was a fun. Who dropped the pass? He dropped the pass too.
He did both.
He fumbled.
He lost
the
in
pass.
The game.
Yeah, well, he didn't lose in the game. But anyway, my point is, and this is partially my bias, he's the type of receiver that I feared covering the most, and I think the other guys that were available, like Keenan Allen, we thought might have been available.
They tried to trade for him.
Yeah. And who's the guy in Cincinnati?
T. Higgins.
Those are big receivers who are don't have the short area quickness that make me personally nervous. So if we are evaluating this trade just by itself, or you're evaluating it versus the other options, like it's a no-brainer versus the other options to me, given their cap space, given their quarterback situation, given where they are in their Super Bowl window. Who else was available that was this good? I guess you could argue they could have tried to move up in the draft and get a rookie, which is an unproven asset. I guess Ayuk was another name that people thought you might have been able to trade for, but that seems more challenging to pull off.
Well, they're not giving up that much to get this done is the thing. That's why I like it for Houston is you look at what they traded. They traded the second round pick in the middle of the second round they got from the Vikings, I believe, when they moved down a couple weeks ago. So you've already added a little bit of draft capital as part of that trade. So you feel like it's not like you play with house money. I hate that argument, but you at least have extra draft capital to work with after making this deal. It's not as if you are totally compromised by trading for Stephon Diggs. And it's not even a 2024 pick. Mm-hmm. It's a 2025 pick. They're really only committed for 1 year. So if we do get that Stephon Diggs, who is complaining about not getting the ball or causing trouble, they're not locked in here. They can move on. You would rather not if you don't have to. But it's not like, you know, it was from the Bills' perspective. I think one of the reasons they made this trade is it felt like things were not getting better. And they had been committed to him as part of signing this new contract where they ate a ton of dead money to get this done, but it kind of just felt like they wanted out of this Stephon Diggs business really at any cost.
Yeah, the eating the dead money is just further validation that it was more than just his play that they had an issue with. So he could be falling off also, which may be part of the reason why they don't want to deal with whatever else is going on. But there was something else going on, which gives me some hope that Stephon Diggs can still ball.
Right. And this is like, I mean, the odds are is he's still going to be a productive player, but this has been a pattern with Minnesota and with Buffalo that he hasn't been happy in the places he's been. And he's been a great receiver. He hasn't been Terrell Owens to justify that. So just to put it back to it, they have Tank Dell. They have Nico Collins, who had almost 1,300 yards and 7 touchdowns last year. Tank Dell was emerging before he broke his leg. These guys are all complementary players. It doesn't seem like Diggs is going to be happy being a number three receiver, but on the field, if you're looking at the team this year, how do you think that pecking order is going to play out?
I just realized we didn't answer your question.
Yeah, that's why I asked it again. That's right.
I would be more surprised if he is a number three receiver. I think in the short term, he is the best receiver they have, even though Nico Collins posted really impressive numbers last year. And I think I'd push back on that, like this idea that Nico Collins is a complimentary receiver. Like, I mean, he played like a number one.
Complimentary to each other. They all have different skill sets. Not as like a no.
Not like he gives lots of praise to his teammates. I believe that they're incentivized to do this with Stephon Diggs, right? Like, it's not as if, you know, even though they didn't trade a first round pick to get him, it's not like they're naive about this. It's not like they're getting Stephon Diggs and they're suddenly going to realize when he gets there, he wants the football. Like,
they know what
they have to be going into this trade. Yeah. Knowing what they're getting. And so you would figure they're trading for him thinking, okay, you're going to be our number one receiver. And if you remember when the Bills traded for Stephon Diggs, it was like a internet wide joke that by week 6, Stephon Diggs was going to be actually physically assaulting Josh Allen. And they were the best of friends for a couple of years. Like the Stephon Diggs problem has not been year one, year two. It's been year 4, year 5. And so for the Texans, I think in the short term, when you have Stroud on the rookie deal, this is a good risk to take.
Yeah, he asked that third receiver question again and was like, what? Stephon Diggs, third receiver? That's crazy.
Well, I mean, the odds are he's going to be if I was actually answering you, I think he'd be the number 2 receiver. That's why I asked
nonsense.
Why?
You didn't give me that option. Charlie, by the way, you're coming at me saying, say it with your chest, and you're coming out and saying that Stephon Diggs is going to be the number two receiver?
That's saying that with my chest.
No. Third was with your chest. So I think the this, again, speaks to maybe my bias.
Saying with Tank Dell's fibula.
Nico Collins is a type of receiver that I've never, like, he's a bigger guy.
And faster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not, like, the short area stuff is what scares the me. So maybe this is my personal bias. If I'm going into a game against Tank and Stephon, I am less concerned, which may be unfair, but I'm less concerned about Tank Dell than, or I'm excuse me, Nico Collins than I am.
Than the other two.
Yeah. Than I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just, that's what I don't like. I don't like the quick guys who also got that speed. It just stresses me out. I'm telling you. Deion Branch used to give me fits, and nobody lining up to put him in the Hall of Fame. But Deion Branch, like, no, I don't want this. All this.
I feel like Nico Collins has become underrated because he sat out the COVID year and he played for a Michigan team that didn't throw the ball that much. And now he's played with a real quarterback and was like an incredibly ascendant player. And you look at his physical profile, 6'4", 215, runs in the 4.3s, huge hands. Like, this guy's like, he's a stud. It's just like, he was probably undervalued because of a weird college situation.
And I think it's frustrating for him because he's eligible for an extension. Yeah. He's coming off of a career year. And now not only is it less likely he gets an extension because they're paying a wide receiver a lot of money, but the chances of him having that kind of year again are diminished by Diggs being added to the roster. So if anyone should be upset about this, I feel like Nico Collins should be the guy who's upset.
We're focused on the wrong angry receiver.
Well, I got one more question about this because I don't know. Because Slowik's from the Shanahan tree. What we saw last year was insane efficiency with the 49ers offense of being able to support five superstar skill position players, even if they don't have necessarily a McCaffrey level guy who's going to lead the group. They were still able to be efficient with Kittle. Ayuk was incredibly efficient. Debo was slightly down. Can they support all three of these guys? Can all three of these guys really be happy in an offense that also has Joe Mixon and Dalton Schultz?
They can be on a week-to-week basis, but not over the course of the entire season, right? Like, you saw weeks last year where Noah Brown had 180 yards or something crazy. You saw weeks where Tank Dell was the dude. And I think that's what they have to settle for, right? Like, Kittle's numbers, Ayuk's numbers, Debo's numbers, maybe 1 year out of three or four, they have, like, career season numbers. But typically, their numbers cumulatively are a little reduced relative to great players at their position because they just don't get the ball frequently enough. And I think that's the concern for me here is, like, you know, I can see them having big games, but are they going to run the ball as much as they did a year ago? Because they were a pretty run-heavy team early in games. And with Stephon Diggs, with Nico Collins, with Tank Dell, with CJ Stroud, like, your offense is built to throw the football.
Your question and then Bill's answer led me to the other thing about Bob Slowik, or Bobby Slowik. Bob Slowik was my defensive coordinator in Denver. Bobby is the young offensive coordinator. Yeah, he's a baby. The young offensive coordinator. And I think that's the thought that I'm having is we're talking about how talent, and again, this is me going for the soft stuff, but like adding talent is never a bad idea, but adding more personalities and more power in the locker room, more powerful personalities does change the dynamic. And as you're preparing for a game, you're often thinking, I would assume as an offensive coordinator, you're thinking, all right, not only about how to attack the defense, but how to engage the proper players at proper times. And that's a whole nother level of preparation for a game. So, all right, we're coming off a week where Nico ain't get any passes, or we're coming off a week where Stephon didn't do anything. Do I have to design? Am I designing a game plan that I think best sets us up to win this week? Or am I designing a game plan that is more concerned about the feelings? And I think we all here can obviously away from it say, oh no, that's stupid. Obviously they're trying to win. But I think in a week to week basis, if you're in that locker room, that's something that any human who's running a team or running an offense is going to be considering. And I don't know that that makes you a better offensive coordinator. Especially for a young guy who hasn't really had this many challenges. It's just another dynamic that we hadn't considered. I hadn't considered until just now, not only keeping them happy, but like, yeah, having the focus on the right places.
If any quarterback in recent history has dealt with the problem of too many ballers at wide receiver, it's CJ Stroud at Ohio State. So I feel like he has a little bit of experience with a great receiving core. But you're right. Like it's going to be a balance keeping everybody happy. It's going to be a balance keeping Joe Mixon happy, Dalton Schultz happy, and building the best possible game plan. But like, isn't that worth the risk? If you have DeMeco Ryans, if you have Bobby Slowik, if you have CJ Stroud, if you feel like your culture is in the right place, like it's kind of like the Bills when they took the shot on Diggs in the first place, right? Like they were trading for a guy who had a reputation where he was not always the most agreeable. He was a little cranky with Mike Zimmer, a little cranky with Kirk, and Diggs fit in just fine for a couple years. So I feel like it's worth a shot.
No disrespect to Minnesota and Buffalo, but I got a feeling that Stephon Diggs might be a little bit happier in Houston. A little bit happier in Houston. So even if he don't get enough passes, there'll be things in Houston that are slightly more his speed. I'm just guessing. I think the food in Houston is probably better.
I can't speculate on this.
He's not a big wings guy.
Maybe he'll get his jersey retired like James Harden. So should we talk about the Bills angle on this?
Yes.
Do you
absolutely?
Yeah. Do you guys think? What do you think this does to the Bills? They obviously are in a different phase of it, but this is a guy who is averaging for the last 10 weeks of the season 48 yards per game. He was not producing for them like a number one.
Yeah, I saw Deion Dawkins posted a slideshow of pictures of him next to Stephon Diggs, which was like
a diorama.
not a diorama, but I don't know. I thought it was an interesting choice. While we're all out here speculating about how Diggs was an issue in the locker room, that their big money tackle decided to make some sort of a social media statement. And so everybody didn't hate him. But that aside, I think it doesn't do a whole lot considering how they were able to end the season out. But I'm not sure that all that is sustainable. And I think it just telegraphs to us that they're going to be drafting a receiver. Probably we already thought they were because they needed a number two if they were going to keep Diggs. So I think it's pretty clear that they're going to be positioning themselves to get one of these receivers. And it's a good year to do so. But the losses on defense, they compensated for those last year in a few different ways. But you can't game plan around too many holes. So while they won't openly admit that they are in a kind of step back mode, there's no arguing that at this current point, their roster is in a bit of a reload mode, and taking a $31 million cap hit to move a talented receiver out of town is just like an exclamation point on that sentence.
They're in the same boat last year's Rams were, where they had their like two or three core guys who were going to stick around, and then everything else is up for grabs. And I think teams might have seen what the Rams did last year and say, hey, that's not as scary of a proposition as we made it out to be. We might be good that year because we have the quarterback. We might be good even despite, you know, our roster not looking, you know, maybe the way that we would have hoped. And I think they had to take that step backwards because this core was old, getting older, and we saw their ceiling, right? Like they have not been a competitive team even in a conference championship game. They made it to one, but like this is a team that has stalled out year after year for various reasons, and which people would say some bad luck in the divisional round. Like I don't think there's anything wrong with the idea of taking a step back and saying, hey, like we've gone as far as we can with this core. We need to kind of get ready for the second half, maybe of Josh Allen's run as our quarterback by retooling, building with young pieces around him. Maybe we land on a Puka Nacua. Maybe we land on a Kyron Williams, who's going to be a valuable player for us at a fraction of what he might be on the open market. Like I think they have to take those swings because they'd already gotten as far as they'd gone, and it wasn't enough.
Yeah, and they can, when they hit on one of those, or if they hit on one of those, then they can redo this process of trying to load back up in the spots and make a run. The quarterback is going to be expensive going forward, but they can move money around to make the cap hit harder. Well, I guess right now should be the time where they front load. I don't know how this contract is formed, but I would assume that now would be the time.
How is contract formed?
How is contract structured? Well, I mean, as my old teammate Fabian Washington used to say, if you can correct me, then you know what I meant.
You did that to me on consummating the trade.
Oh, yeah.
You knew exactly what I meant.
I know. Of course I did. But I had to wiggle out
then
of
Charlie
it.
Charlie would do it to me, and then the show will be over.
Yep.
No, I mean, you're absolutely correct. And from the Bills' perspective, like, this is a draft they have to nail, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they have to get a wide receiver in this draft. They have Dalton Kincaid, who's like a quasi tight end. They'll play more 12 personnel, but we have seen this work. JP Acosta pointed this out on the excellent Bill Barnwell show, where I am also the best guest on the Bill Barnwell show. He pointed out this is kind of what the Chiefs did, right?
Yeah.
Like trading Tyreek Hill, going bigger with 12 personnel. I think I talked about last year as they were getting Kincaid into the roster. Like, this is a team that is evolving because they haven't necessarily had the answers they needed against teams who were willing to just play soft coverage and let Josh work his way slowly down the football field. And last year, they came into the year saying, okay, we're going to be different. We're going to run the ball. We're not going to put the ball in Josh's hands 10 times a game. And when they struggled, what did they do? Yeah. They went right back to just, Josh, you figure it out, man. We need your help. So I think realistically, this is trying to find a more sustainable long-term solution, just like the Chiefs did by trading Tyreek Hill and making changes to their offense.
So they have a bunch of paths they could go down the draft with.
Pathways.
I'm
sorry. We're playing this game now. Bill also said absolutely correct. Like, I mean, if you're correct, can you be absolutely correct? Aren't you correct?
All right. All
levels
right.
So, of correctness.
Do you think they should try and trade?
Can we mute Dominique for a minute?
Do you think they should try and trade up and get Roma Dunze, who's viewed as like an elite receiver just below Neighbors and Harrison, or try and value engineer their draft picks at 28 and 60 because there's a chance you could end up with Ladd McConkey, Xavier Leggett, or even trade slightly less draft capital, move into the teens, get a Brian Thomas, a Brock Bowers. Is it worth it to try and trade up to get that number one guy, that replacement guy, someone who we view as a very elite prospect, or in this draft, take more shots?
I'd say take more
Ladd
shots.
Ladd McConkey would be a star in Buffalo, though.
He would eat.
He would be a hero in Buffalo immediately.
The sneakiest 4-3-9 out there.
The sneakiest 4-3-9. Him and Cooper DeJean, just they draft those two guys, and it's just a very sneaky roster. No, I agree with Dominique. This should be a situation where I think you take your shots because, by all accounts, and maybe people are wrong, but by all accounts, when you talk to people in the league, people who are paying close attention to the draft, this is an extremely deep wide receiver class. This is not a class where it's three great dudes and then nobody else. So I think you take your shots. I think maybe you take two wideouts. Yeah. Maybe you trade down and try to get a couple guys in the second round. I think they're not one wide receiver away. Yeah, and you saw with the Chiefs.
Exactly.
Like, they did not go out and get the Tyreek Hill replacement. They went out and got a bunch of different guys. Yeah. Most of them sucked, but they still won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's exactly the point that I was thinking is that if you are a something away, that's when you trade up. Like, yeah. I don't think you trade up when you're clearly in a mode where you have lots of things that you need to address. Unless there's something that, like, I think of Lamar Jackson as like, oh, gosh, this is still around. Let's trade. Like, unless there's something like that where someone that you see as a top of the draft type of guy is sliding, then maybe you take a trade up and try to grab that guy. But right now, they're in a mode where, like you said, with the Rams, take a lot of shots and hopefully you land first round talent later in the draft. All right, Bill.
Dominique Foxworth.
All right.
Wayne Gretzky.
Am I Wayne Gretzky? I am the great one.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't
take. Oh, got you.
Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott, Dominique Foxworth.
Yeah, I don't ascribe to hockey people's idioms. They just fight for fun.
You should go to
hockey peepers.
Damn it. You guys are winning. I have a lot more fluffs than
you. Hockey peepers, man.
I'm sorry, man. The weight of this show is on my back. What can I say?
Hold on. Before you go, can you guess how many goals Wayne Gretzky scored as a 10-year-old? I got to go to his Wikipedia page.
Oh, as a 10-year-old, did he like play professionally when he was like...
But junior hockey.
Oh, junior hockey, 10-year-old. Bill Barnwell's got to go. Do you know the answer to this question? I'll say 100.
He scored more than 100 goals. I feel very confident.
Okay.
As a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
For the Brantford Steelers in junior hockey.
Junior hockey, so that's like adults?
No, I mean, it's junior, like people. Okay. But he scored in one season 378 goals and had 139 assists.
That's ridiculous.
But was he good in the locker room, though? What about the soft stuff? Was he a good teammate?
Obviously he was. And if he wasn't, it doesn't matter. If you put up numbers like that, we all understand the sliding scale, which is why I put up with your
That's me. That's me on this show. No one likes me. Charlie and Dominique just contact me. I am business when I show up. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm dressed up. That's why... I am the official bald white guy of the Dominique Foxworth
show. You are dressed like you are going to the Republican National Convention.
I was
going to
say Ryan Russillo's funeral.
All right. That's a great way to end it. All our delegates go to the great Bill Barnwell. Next up, Roses and Thorns.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
How has Dominique been lately?
Bad or good?
Let's find out. This is Roses and Thorns.
Time for your favorite segment with my favorite person, Roses and Thorns, with my wife, Ashley. So,
I'm your favorite person, but not your favorite guest.
You are my favorite guest.
So.
Oh, yeah. Bomani got mad at me this morning when I recorded with him about that.
Do people know what?
Yeah. So on yesterday's episode or Wednesday's episode, at the top of the show, Ryan Rosillo asked me to list my favorite guests. And I said Bill Barnwell was one and Bill Barnwell was two. And then Ashley was three. And Bomani was pissed because he didn't even make the top three.
And he said, obviously, Bill is one and Barnwell is two. Bill and Barnwell are the same person as y'all know because you listen.
You know Bill's favorite segment?
I mean, because he has good taste.
Roses and Thorns.
It's been a while also. but no, like part of me doesn't even care to be offended by that because I hate like.
Of course you shouldn't be.
Oh, only a small part of me doesn't care to be offended because our kids are always asking like, Mom, what's your favorite this? Mom, what's your favorite that? When you were little, what was your favorite that? Other than color, pink, and on some days, on a lot of days, but it's a secret, child. I don't have favorites. So I would respect someone who just said I don't have favorites, but no, you answered the question.
Ranked them.
And you said, Bill, oh yeah, my wife. And you know what that makes this man? A liar. Because he opens up this segment all the time, talking about I'm his favorite.
Person.
I have a question.
Not guest. Very different.
What does Bill do you're a difficult for you that guest. I can't do?
He follows the construct of the show. You're a great person.
Tell me what the current construct of Roses and Thorns is.
Me being the host and you.
Is it though, or is this a partnership?
See, exactly. There we go. Bill, still number one, baby.
Listen,
keep it up.
Listen, the one, other than like, I don't love favorites, but then I was like, I can forgive him. But then I was like, well, but he went ahead and started answering this, so I can't forgive him. Part of me was like, but you know what? I'm not really a guest. I'm his co-host, his partner for
exactly.
Roses and Thorns for
exactly.
this segment.
That's true. So this I'm is no longer guest. The Dominique Foxworth Show. As you see, the imaging
it's
on the
Roses
screen
and
has
Thorns,
changed.
And it's both
it,
of
before
us.
This, it said Dominique Foxworth Show. Now it says Roses and Thorns. So
on
it's like, would
screen.
I say Charlie's my favorite guest? No.
Exactly. Well, that's yeah. what that exactly.
You and Charlie,
so, like,
perfect,
seriously, I was
week.
Like, we're not excluding Charlie in the same way we're not excluding me. But then here's why that failed. Because
failed.
He listed me as his third favorite guest. So
no,
obviously,
because you originally started as a guest.
Obviously, he was including me as
you
a guest.
You started as a
even
guest.
Even though I was trying to like bump myself up to
you
unpaid co-host
a guest.
Of a small segment
so,
that comes on occasionally.
This is funny to me because you are an English major, went to law school, and you're very like analytical in your thinking, but yes. you refuse to do it on any type of like books or movie or music.
I've been reading Up a Storm.
No. You have been reading Up a Storm. Mm, but if I ask you what
I'm gonna let you finish.
But if I ask you what if I ask you about like an allegory for a TV show or a book or something, or an allusion in a book, you have no interest in talking about it, even though you're probably the most qualified person I know to analyze these sorts of things. But you never want to do that. You don't want to watch deep TV shows. You don't want to watch heavy movies or read heavy books or do any of that thinking, unless it involves one.
Okay.
Beyonce Knowles. And that's what I found interesting this last week, is not only that the Cowboy Carter, and as you guys can see if you're watching, she's already in costume, which
is it costume?
On theme.
Or, you know how sometimes he comes on here and he's like, oh, that's something new? Or is this all stuff that I've worn? And honestly, I used to wear it like this.
No.
Regularly.
Well, no, I don't know
so
if you ever.
It's not costume. I mean, I didn't put
It's not
in
a
my
costume,
hair,
but it's clearly you're on theme.
I'm on theme. You know, I love it.
But I've been surprised, not by how much you've listened to it, but how much thought you've put into it. It's normally not something that you want to do, is like analyze things.
So I'm definitely someone who likes art for beauty's sake,
right?
Like not for like deep thought. Although I have read about 6 books so far this year.
Yeah, you've only been a monster.
Thank you. A tyrant, you could say.
So we're gonna do that, like when Travis Kelce first started dating Taylor Swift, and everyone in sports media felt the need to like, this is something that you might have missed, but everyone was slipping in Taylor songs into their analysis of Kelce.
Yes, I wrote a birthday party invitation for my best friend the other day in full Cowboy Carter language, but it is a Cowboy Cooper themed party, so that was appropriate. Though I'm not a favorite having person, I will say, other than some hits on B-Day, Upgrade You, Get Me Body, still bring me joy every time I hear them, I would say this is my favorite. Like, and I'm not a favorite having person other than Children in Pink. This is, I think, my favorite. Other than Children Secretly, although I have a necklace with all of their names. It broke recently, but I'm going to get it repaired, even though it's new, it broke. Yeah. And someone suggested that I secretly twist the favorite of the day's name to the front. So that's what I'm going to do once that necklace is repaired. This, I would say, is my favorite Beyonce album. Because, one, these songs are great. If you haven't listened to Cowboy Carter, y'all need to listen to it. The songs are great. But also, it is so smart and well done.
I'm normally a strictly hip hop music fan, and I haven't always loved Beyonce's music. But it feels like she's gotten away from, I mean, she's always pop music, but she's gotten away from pop and gotten more into like the more thoughtful type of music in the
like
last,
reclaiming genres that Black people contributed to or started over the years.
I've enjoyed
that we've been distanced from over
as
time.
Much as this album has been on in our house, I've enjoyed
so
it
much.
More than I expected.
Shout out to Sonos.
As much as or more than I expected to enjoy it.
So you know how like, and I'm a big Tupac fan. So yes. Like, you know how like there are like Tupac classes popping up in English departments, and I wish when we went to Maryland there was one of those. There wasn't. But when I was an English teacher, I did teach some Tupac.
Yeah, I
I'd be like, okay, class, sit down. But this to me is like a dissertation. Like this is something that deserves to be like taught. This one album, not like, oh, we're going to teach Beyonce. We're going to teach Cowboy Carter as a class. It will have a syllabus. It is
so
like.
So what is, I mean, what is, I think that takes a, that's, I don't know. What's the thesis of the class? What's the point of the class? Because I haven't listened to it as deeply as you have. I'm sure it's not just like Black people reclaiming country music. Like there's something more to this than that, I assume.
Like, and obviously that's like on the face, you could say that that's it, right? But if you like dive in more deeply, it's also like Black people reclaiming their space in spaces that we've been excluded from, including just this country. Like all the imagery that she, a lot of the imagery that she put out like before the album, including like the cover, it had like American flag references. Mm-hmm. And you know, like even we sometimes, when we go to a 4th of July parade, but you're like, I'm gonna wear this outcast version of the American flag, not a real American flag. Like as Black people, we like distance ourselves from that. So I mean, I think she faced a lot of like pushback on that, but like no, we built this place. Yeah. Like, and
now that's I think before the show, we talked a little bit about the relationship between that and 1619 Project. And that was one of the big things. And
see, that's when I didn't read. That was a little too deep.
In the early part of 1619 Project is about how, like, who should be more proud of this country than us, and who had more responsibility in building it than us and sacrificed more than us and our ancestors. So we should not, although it does feel like there's a message being sent. And it's not a positive one when you see people prominently like displaying the American flag, which is a weird thing to say and weird thing to feel. But yeah, there's symbolism with everything. And the symbol for people who are like aggressively patriotic is exclusionary. And it's the people that are being excluded are often minorities. And and that sort of thing.
But so, like, to your question, what was the thesis? Like, so beyond just Black people, like, regaining their footing in, like, country music, I think also just, like,
society.
in broader society, but also just, like, blurring divisions. And, like there's a quote somewhere in the album from a woman named Linda Martell, who I never heard of, right. And we'll get to that in a second, but who was, like, one of the first maybe Black female country artists, at right. least, who's alive. And she says, like, genres are a funny little yeah. concept, and kind of brings...
Oh, I've heard it multiple times.
He's heard it. Yes. But, like, makes, you know, like we've made all these divisions, like, in music, in art, in culture, that, like, so many of them are so artificial, but, like, we maintain them. But, like, so yeah. I think the thesis isn't just about, like, country music, but it's about, like, blurring these lines of division and trying to, like, unite. Like, the first song is called American Requiem. And if you look at that as, like, a thesis, it's, like, we are going to, like, break down so many of these barriers that, like, our fathers have put up, our symbolic fathers. But, like, if you think about, like a paper, like, if this were a dissertation, right, mm-hmm. like, back to my school days, and, like, when you're trying to persuade people, like, I was a rhetoric minor, and so you learn, you know, that, like, the three keys of persuasion are logo, so you have to have, like, a logical, coherent argument. Ethos, you have to prove why you're the person who has, like, a valid say, why you're credible to make this argument, and pathos, like, have an emotional connection. Like, that is all, like, mm-hmm. there, and it's got this amazing thesis. It shows that, like, it's logical, like, from the beginning, like, we helped build this country. She talks about her roots, it's funny. Her southern roots.
So two things. One, mm-hmm. you are a French minor also. Can you do it in French? And two...
you do a lot of French.
You can't.
Okay.
You struggled this morning with your French this morning.
Oh, but does she know the Declan's going to be at the house at 3?
You nailed it. You got it done. It's about getting the job done.
Our housekeeper is Haitian, so
the
sometimes in French.
The question, or the funny thing that popped in my head when you were saying that, is there is a thing that I think even you would accept as a fair criticism of this album, and I guess maybe this was
bring
just
it on
her.
And look at my eyes, they're coming up with the clapback.
Yeah, I'm sure
it.
That's the problem with ever arguing with you is you're smarter and quicker than me, so I'll lose it, but they'll know I'm right. And maybe this is her also, like, maybe this is
an
allegory.
Oh, see, he's
allegory.
Trying to already pad.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that it could be an allegory for America also, is that the one criticism is she piled all the Black people on her album into one song at the beginning. And then, you know who gets their own, you know who gets their own showcase? Miley.
Along with her. She gets
Dolly.
A duet.
Post Malone.
A duet.
No, I know what I'm saying. They get complete duets.
Linda Martell also.
Point is, Blackbird, beginning of an album. We're going to get all the Black people, get them in here, do all this
and
stuff.
And after the thesis, I'm going to call all of these Black American women, in that case, to, like, say, like, this is our chance to soar. So there you go. Okay. That makes sense. And that's the perfect second paragraph of her dissertation. But I think that goes to, like I said, logos. Like, she's proving why this is a logical thing. Like, we've been in country music. I'm going to give you little tiny snippets of old country songs throughout the album. I'm going to bring Linda Martell, and I'm going to, you know, explain that, like, America has a lot of sins that now we need to kind of purify in order to move on as a country, and I need you guys to rally with me to do this. But ethos is credibility. So, like, one, like, I'm going to tell you from the first song, my roots are from Alabama, a moonshine man, Galveston, Louisiana.
Very country.
I'm very country. I'm so country that when I first came out, y'all said I was too country.
Yeah.
And now I finally, like, am doing this album that I've been working so hard to do for years, decades even, and I'm not country enough to do it, but really I am. So that's establishing her credibility. She's been wearing cowboy hats for God knows how many months getting ready for it. But also, I'm going to bring in these, like, country icons, Dolly Parton and Willie Nelson, who are going to tell you that we're doing the same thing or having the same issues. Right. They're just a hair of a different color. And, you know, you don't even know what's good. So I'm going to tell you, this is what Willie Nelson basically right. says. Like, y'all out there don't know what's good. I'm going to tell you what's good. And this is what's it. So I think I get that point. But I also think that's part of, like, making a strong argument and establishing credibility, and then bringing in, like, the younger pop people. Because I really think, like, in a sense, it's like work. Like this is like, can affect change. Like, in the way that sports can unite and you know, bring people together. I think Beyonce perhaps might see this, or it could be seen. I don't know if she sees it, but would hope she does, as something to unite people and bring people together. But it's not going to work if only her fans, or even only Black country fans, listen to it. No. So if you get, what really will help is if Taylor Swift and her have a remix. Taylor has an album coming out later in April. And I really hope that there's like a remix coming, a Taylor and Beyonce want that. Moment.
I mean, that'd be cool, but
if it's
but
like a, if it's to make prefer, change and to get the message out there.
I prefer them to, since genres are just a construct, let's take from hip hop and let's do some battle ballads back and forth. I want a diss track. I want a diss ballad from Beyonce to Taylor Swift. That'd
some be much better. Some people said this was like her being like.
I mean, she did come to the country thing, and I know like when she performed with the Dixie Chicks back at the CMAs, like I read that stuff that they kind of
see. I didn't do any reading.
Rejected and shunned her. So like this is, I guess the final kind of question about this album, or I guess about your opinion of this album, is another thing that I felt is like it feels. The way that you present it, it doesn't sound like she is looking for acceptance or validation. But I have heard this criticism, and I could see it as fair. It's like, this feels somewhat contrived and like, all right, where do I need to go? What do I need to do to get album of the year? What do I need to do to get acceptance?
She mentioned that on Sweet Honey Bucking. And I can't remember verbatim what she says, but
I mean, it's just funny that
whatever.
She anticipated.
She ain't worried about that.
That's another argument.
A-O-T-Y.
It's another... Another argument, or I guess rhetoric strategy, is that you're supposed to
and
like,
that Jay-Z made that speech at the Grammys right before this came out, and she sat there like
you're supposed to anticipate and like defend against those things. So she's already got Willie Nelson because she anticipated obviously that people are going to reject her for coming to country. She got Willie Nelson to say she's okay, which I'm not sure how it's going to work in the long run. But also the idea that this is not genuine, because I was thinking this earlier.
I don't see how it's not genuine. She's been wearing fringe and like being country her whole career. As she says throughout the album, she had to work really hard to even be able to make this album. Like people didn't want her to be able to make
it. I get it. I understand that. My point is that it's there going to be some, when you're Beyonce, you're an industry unto yourself. So there are going to be calculations made about the next move. I mentioned to you when you explained to me the phases of this that it feels like the MCU. And like there's a lot of people thinking about this.
Which means Marvel Cinematic Universe. I have to ask them what the hell was MCU. I just kept seeing like mucus.
BCU? The Beyonce Cinematic Universe. Or it's not cinematic.
So...
So I guess my
okay, I get that I'm sounding like the biggest member of the Beehive right now defending this, but I'm actually not. But Beehive people have told me, I think to get to your question, that Act One was like reclaiming house music and doing a house music thing. So initially when it first came out, people were like, oh, maybe Act Two's the tour, Act Three's the documentary. No, all of Act One was the renaissance, the house music album, tour, documentary.
Right.
Act Two now is this country.
Right.
Moment, and maybe I've heard that maybe later today, guys. Oh, also happy 1 week since you came out, Cowboy Carter. Happy 1 week birthday.
Yeah, you can't claim not to be a crazy member of the Beehive when clearly you are now.
Anyway, I've heard members of the Beehive say that she might announce a tour today.
She is pretty
sexy.
As in
on Friday.
I mean, her music is like
it is, and that's the thing. Like, you get all the themes in Cowboy Carter. You get deep. About America's sins and reclaiming it. You get like revenge
and
you get
nasty
unity
tracks.
And you get sex. And she makes me want to ride it like a tyrant, though I also want to go to sleep at 9 p.m. And our kids, so that's a tricky issue. But anyway, we all can't be Beyonce. But so I've heard people guessing that Act Three might be
the rock takeover.
Might be rock. Which, you know, like Chuck Berry.
You
would have
made that same face about country music
before. No, but I've
before.
Always liked a little bit of country. Other than I've always liked
Broken
some.
Road.
Our wedding song, I mean, a black guy sang it, but it was God Bless the Broken Road, which my mom was like, so, like, what are we saying happened before this? And I'm like, oh, shut up. Jordan sang it well. And I love that song. And I've always liked random Miley Cyrus songs. And I've liked some Carrie Underwood and Kelly Clarkson and a couple Tennessee Whiskey. Like there's certain songs I've always liked, but I've never really liked rock songs. So if Act Three really is rock, it's going to take some coming around for me.
Enjoy Cowboy
Carter.
But
it'll be a Beyonce album, not a rock album. And I'm going to freaking love Cowboy Carter and dress Western till then. Okay, I have some roses of the week.
Oh, okay. Wow.
One, Cowboy Carter.
Okay, congratulations.
Two, Coach Daddy's back.
Oh, yeah. I'm coaching again. I got them boys in line.
They've had one practice so far, but it was a good one.
No, I was telling I actually told Bomani this also. I'm no longer a player's coach. They had to players
what does
coach.
That mean?
So like player's coach is the guy who's like friends with all the players and is a lenient coach.
Oh, my son says that he never was. My son's like, he is the meanest coach. I'm like, I've seen him out there, actually.
Yeah, really,
and he's
nice.
A little too
but anyway,
nice.
I'm really proud of him. We had one practice and
so what are you now? If you're not a player's coach, what are you?
Disciplinarian, taskmaster.
Taskmaster.
No, I mean, I gave them a little, like, preseason conversation where I was like, look, last year I'm better as a coach. I've learned some new things. I'm going to be better. And this is your team. It's not about me. Like, do you have to decide how what you want of this season? I can tell you like how to be successful. And honestly, I don't have to tell you how to be successful. You all know, like, you're 11 years old. You know, like, discipline and structure and accountability. You all understand that these are the things that are important. I'm not going to be here trying to force you to, like, stand and get in line and do these things. I'll be here to help you, but it's on you to stay focused and to keep everybody else focused. And the whole first practice was great. They were calling each other, holding each other accountable. They weren't, like, pushing back, and they weren't begging. Yeah, no, but I mean, the first practice is often the most difficult one. So we got one practice before our first game, and I was really happy with what we did so far. So I'm proud of my guys. I'm excited.
I can't make the first game. I'm so sad. I have a birthday party to take the kids to.
No problem.
I mean, take the girls to. Well, I'm excited for Coach Addy back on the field. Yeah, it'll be a great season, I hope, for the Metro Tigers.
We got it. We'll have fun.
But also have a recommendation that...
Is it Cowboy Carter?
Well, yeah, I do recommend that all of you listen to Cowboy Carter. Like, okay. Of course. And, like, if you haven't, I don't want to go out attacking people, but you really should listen to it. Mm. But my recommendation is from the coaching stuff. We're older, so we weren't there at the same time, but our fellow Terps, Chanel Smith, she ran track there and coaches track, and her husband Torrey Smith, who played with you also for a year at the Ravens before you retired, and he was a rookie, and then he continued on. They are both separately so devoted to coaching kids. Like, I feel like they could give a master class in coaching, and I would really love to see.
Yeah.
He might have, like, his own podcast, and he's probably too busy coaching.
No, he does,
but I would recommend that you guys have, like, a joint podcast.
I'll call
all
him
about
up and get,
like,
him on, but
youth coaching, because he's, like, they seem both Chanel too. They are phenomenal.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is why Bill
Barnwell
is my
favorite guest. So am I a producer also? Is that what producers do? Come up with content?
Yeah. Everything. We got
to But he listed me as his third favorite guest, so he sees me as a guest.
I don't.
Is the issue.
I don't.
You do.
When you used to be a guest, you were my third favorite person. I don't have sex with Bill Barnwell. All right. Thank
exactly.
You.
What does Bill do for him that I can't do?
No, I don't anymore. Bill and I broke up. Thank you to all the great producers, Megan, Kevin, Brian, Serafina, and of course, Podville. I love you so much. Oh, and Cortez is a coward. You're welcome, Charlie.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.